This is Wine, Women, and Revolution with your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Wine, Women, and Revolution. I'm your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. You can find us online at www.njrevolutionradio. Follow us on all the social medias and get us wherever you get your podcasts from. Today, I have one of my favorite smart people back on the show with me. You may remember him before. He was on, I think the show was called something about inspiration porn or something along those lines. Yeah. Welcome back to the show, Jeremy.
Thanks for having me back on.
Yeah, that last show that you're on was a great episode. A lot of people really enjoyed it. And we talked a little bit about how we use and exploit people as a way of like making ourselves feel better. Like, well, oh, this person in a wheelchair did some basic thing in their daily lives, and now we're all going to like somehow get inspiration from that.
Yeah. Also, there's a point where, you know, it's inspirational if something is done for disabled people that, you know, who is overcoming economic constraints that are often placed on us. It's like, look at this charity that helps people that should have already been helped, but they were left behind for no reason other than profit. It's, and look how selfless this entrepreneur is. That's giving away some of his fortune that he didn't earn. And
right. So we wanted to talk about something a little bit similar today. Is another one of these inspirational, feel-good media things. Like, I've seen a couple of stories recently where, like, somebody's insurance denied a wheelchair for this, like, 10-year-old kid. So a high school science team built him a wheelchair. We should all feel good about that. When really, that's a commentary. We're living in some sort of dystopian nightmare where a high school science team is providing medical necessities to children.
Well, imagine what we could do if the high school science team coordinated actual scientists. But they need money and access for that that they don't have. And they could call us themselves. Scientists, if they wanted to, say, hey, we need a wheelchair for our friend. Can you help us with this? We need it. But come to think of it, wheelchairs should be for e-access anyway for anyone who needs them. It's like if you had to pay a fee for someone not to club you in the kneecaps, you know?
Right. But instead, we're supposed to feel so good or so inspired. And there was another one where some, you know, young child paid off his schoolmate's lunch debt. And like,
lunch debt.
Right. The fact that lunch debt is even a term we use in this day and age. And you, I think had posted something about that on your website, Democratize the Media, right? You had commented about that a little bit.
Yeah. Basically, Democratize the Media, you know, looks at the news and looks at pop culture and posts things that are relevant to, you know, how the capitalist media kind of manipulates us into certain mindsets and certain ways of thinking and how that influences the economy and how the economy influences culture. Or it's a real back and forth, dialectical, to use a fancy word, relationship. Where they sort of feed off each other, and it's hard to escape it because we're in it. It's hard to escape the culture. You can't really root against someone getting their insurance. You can't really root against someone getting sick. These people are going to be like, "What's the matter with you? Aren't you? Shouldn't you feel good about this?" But on the other hand, you know, you can't really root for the situation that allowed the crisis to have to be solved in the first place. So it's a difficult balance, and it's not easy to figure out how to criticize when you're in this culture.
Right. And with something like this, of course we feel good about the altruism of the kids. Like, right. You know, that should be normal human nature, even mm-hmm. though we're taught that that's not human nature, but that should just be normal. Altruism should be part of who we are, but the situation is a horrible commentary on society.
Of course.
What kind of things would you say, you know, assuming that this media and these pushes of these feel-good stories, would you call them exploitive, or what? How exactly would you define these stories and the commentary about what they're saying about
us? I would call them manufacture. I would say that they exist because of a system that they have been under. Because I'm a bad socialist, I like to watch the show Shark Tank, which is a show in which people who want to get their businesses started sort of beg for money from rich investors. No, they're in the system as it exists, and they buy into it. But you know, think about how many stories we hear about. You know, the small business owner who had to sell their car and sell their house and, you know, sleepless nights and whatever it takes to get this business off the ground. I had no help, you know, whatever it is that someone needs to do to survive in this world. The fact that people are in a situation where they need to, you know, absorb their entire identity into how good of an entrepreneur they are is even bad for the capitalists.
Yeah, it is. I did a show a couple weeks about mental health under capitalism, and losing yourself in the pursuit of money is very common, and it's not a healthy mental status to be in.
And for the worker, you know, they need to subject themselves to abuse in extreme cases. Is there just the, you know, conformity in most mundane cases of the capitalist economy in order to quote unquote make something of themselves? And that's certainly not healthy either. But given that, you know, this is America, we are forced to conform to a system that has us competing against one another, and that is not healthy. You know, you avoid leaving a job, even if you're secure, because you don't want to lose social capital. And if you're not secure, you avoid leaving a job, because if you don't, you'll starve.
Right. Those are the options. Like, stay in a bad situation or die, essentially, are the options you're presented with.
Yes. And that's bad, of course, but a lot of people think that if, you know, this worked, this system that existed, you know, nothing would get done. I always retort with, if nothing's made, then things are not going to be made. Things need to be made because people exist, and if things aren't made, then shit's gonna suck, you know? And I also counter by saying that, you know, janitors and, garbage workers, sanitation workers, should, you know, have the respect that soldiers and cops have now. You know, well, make it a part-time job that's rotating. Thank a sanitation worker for their service. Thank a janitor for their service. Thank a nurse for their service. You know, well, whatever it is that keeps society functioning is not necessarily a bad thing. It can just be done more efficiently and more universally if everyone had access to the resources that very many people don't currently have, and people in the first world tend to have more of. I've also said that a lot of times, you know, I have nothing to gain from social democracy. I'm privileged enough where, you know, oh, I have health insurance, I've been to college, I don't have student debt, but I still live with my parents, and, you know, well, as I said last time, you know, who likes mortgages, who likes rent? You know, people on the internet were commenting sarcastically against Sanders' student debt erasure plan, saying, hey, why don't you pay my student loan? Oh, ta-ha, I got you, you wouldn't do that. And communists were like, yeah, I would.
Right. Yeah. There's this weird narrative. This subject is, we're going off on a tangent, but it's a good tangent. There's this weird narrative of somehow, because someone had to pay off their student debt, that it's somehow an insult to them that now other people might not have to. And, you know, I've seen an analogy of, like, I had to get chicken pox when I was a kid. I don't begrudge people who get vaccinated for chicken pox now.
Right, right.
And it's a very weird, like, it's trying to, you know, it's part of that narrative again of, you know, not caring about each other and that's right. somehow natural, which is very alien to me.
I mean, there are a few people who don't care largely about other people, and they're the people who tend to succeed in this system. And the people who do care about other people are either, you know, outliers or are liable to be crushed by someone who doesn't.
Right.
You don't want to end up in a system where if you crush your competition to poverty, that means you're good at your job.
Right, it means you're a horrible person, and you shouldn't be rewarded for making others unable to live. That's not something we should be rewarding people for doing in society.
One of the things the sharps say on Shark Tank is, "What's your plan for world domination?" And I reflected on, like, that's a normal question to ask. And also, you know, it's important to know that, you know, shows like that exist, you know, because there's a camera, they can put them in the room, put in the room, and, you know, made a show. Like, there are some things that only exist because of, you know, the saying famous for being famous. It's the same way with some of these reality shows. Like, let me take a look at your family restaurant, or let me see how terrible your business is. Let me, you know, will make you feel bad for not being as willing to sell overseas for pennies an hour, or as the other entrepreneur. Let's not think about the fact that much of our food, water, wealth, all electronics come from third world countries. We have the stuff now. We can do it. We can succeed with the advantage that we were given by colonizing European settlers at destroyed land for indigenous people. Isn't that great? Isn't that great that we're successful now? You know, that's
we're great at exploiting people. Yay, us! It is very bizarre mindset for sure. And speaking of exploitation, one of the other things that we did want to talk about today was that probably by the time you hear this, it will have already happened, but there's Amazon workers that are planning to go on strike on Prime Day, which I think is sometime next week from when we're
recording. I think it's the 15th. I think it's a good idea them. Not that difficult to not use Amazon for one day, I don't think. But also, you know, I want to make the point that, you know, Amazon on itself is not a bad concept in principle. There's nothing wrong with a huge, you know, for lack of a better term, marketplace, where you can just order whatever you want and have it delivered to you in one centralized location. Now, you know, it's my opinion that one of the reasons that social estates have failed in the past is that the 20th century was not ready for communism. It didn't have the technology to support it. You know, the world was not interconnected. It's hard to, in the case of the USSR, it's hard to go from a feudal empire straight to a socialist one without going through a capitalist stage of development in between. But, you know, now I think with multinational corporations, the world may be more ready for socialism than ever because they're kind of doing some of the work for us, you know. ANCAPs, anarcho-capitalists and classical liberals talk about, oh, you know, the greatness of the free market and competition, and isn't that a great one? In reality, it creates a monopoly where as soon as a company gets big enough, it buys off its competition, and everyone's fine with that. They buy everything from Amazon. They watch everything on Netflix. They eat at the same, you know, restaurant groups or franchise operation. And, you know, there's a reason big corporations are big is because as they're popular, and because access to them is easy. Now, imagine if we kept the big corporations as huge as they are and just took control of them.
If the people owned them instead of one douchebag in California.
Yeah. I mean, you know, international capitalism has really set up a world where international socialism is possible, in my opinion, because, you know, we wouldn't have to take over one company at a time, and one company owns a bunch of other companies. You know, well, I'm sure there are people who exist out there, probably local to us, that get all their stuff from Amazon, buy all their groceries at Whole Foods, watch all their stuff on Netflix, surf the web with Facebook and YouTube and not much else. You know, go on Reddit.
Right, I think you're onto something here with this, like, whole concept. Because I know a lot of problems with previous communist or socialist is the logistics of actually getting the resources to the people. And a corporation like Amazon already has logistics down. They know, I can order a pair of pants and know where that pair of pants is, like, every 20 minutes along the route. And they can get it to me in the afternoon of the day I ordered it. Like, no. Those kind of resource distribution can open us up to get resources to everyone if they are in the right hands.
Now, to be clear, Amazon does often use their workers, it might take, you know, the socialist revolution a while to get to this needs that Amazon has without, you know, stressing everyone out and making them work themselves to exhaustion. But I think we'll get to that point, especially because there is no reason to hold back artificial intelligence when there's no one to profit from it.
If we're not competing against our own advancement.
Before Stephen Hawking died, he talked about how there are basically two paths to go down. We could either let automation take over in this economy, and, you know, a few assholes can own the entire economy, and just the working class can, or the non-owning class, if we're going to get technical, because the line between who's a worker and who's not really comes down to who owns things. But anyway, you can say, he said basically, a few people can own shit and just control the masses, or the masses can control the machines, and we can all be happy. Now, which one do you want to go down?
Right.
But also, on the other hand, the prospect of, you know, human-like artificial intelligence might kind of creep me out if they can entrance, because we don't want a repeat of, you know, submission and slavery. So we gotta be careful to not make machines that are too much like us. Possibly it would be better to, you know, augment machines into our daily lives, like we have with our cell phones and our computers can use, in a way, artificial intelligence that wasn't in the 20th century. So, I think we're moving towards automation in ways that can be ethical and amenable to humans that we just haven't used because it's not profitable to do so, because as the capitalist class needs workers to exploit in order to buy its stuff. Which is why I think, for example, in the presidential race, you know, Andrew Yang is the presidential candidate who's advertising his universal basic income. And I've read basically that, you know, he wants to make it a choice between, you know, the income and the welfare benefits. And the reason he wants to do that is because it keeps the market going and, you know, keeps people buying stuff and, you know, is a way to eventually cut welfare benefits. And if it's, and he has no concern with the exploitation of the worker insofar as how it affects the worker. He just, you know, fears the poverty of everybody, but wants to create a constant band-aid as opposed to actually turning over ownership to everybody, which would make a completely different machine as opposed to constantly fixing this crappy one. So,
right, he wants to slap a big old Band-Aid on capitalism. That capitalism is crumbling around us, and he's trying to, like, slap a Band-Aid on it and be like, no, no, it can last a little longer.
Yeah.
Aside from, and here's always been my concern about base income, is unless we address our exploitation of the global South, where we're getting these resources from, then we're still exploiting people. We're just slightly raising up the middle class in this country at the expense of the rest of the world. So unless we can address that somehow, then base income is still exploitation.
Yeah, so is social democracy for that matter, because as I said before, the world is already a global economy. And, you know, a so-called developed country like the United States can only have so much wealth to give away a welfare benefit. It's because another country in the global South does not. And it's because of imperialism like that that people are coming from Central America to escape poverty, because they say America's the land of opportunity is because America has hoarded all the opportunity in their homeland, and they expect people to not come there. Or they do expect people to come there. They just want to punish the brown people for coming, even though they were coerced into coming because, you know, there's no community development because they don't have any capital because the global north stole it all.
Right. We took all their resources, and now they're complaining about why they have no resources and wanting to come here. Like, we just pretend we don't understand what's going on, when really we are the cause of all of this refugee situation, that we're taking everyone else's resources and using them, exploiting them as a labor force, as well as taking the physical resources of the earth, but exploiting them as workers for pennies when, you know.
Yeah, no one is... explain to me what exactly would be wrong with opening the borders and letting people live where they want. You know, we have open borders internally within the United States. You know,
right?
You know,
I can go to Maryland and not like destabilize the whole world. So why can't we have a free flow between us and Canada and Mexico and all of our neighboring countries?
Well, because we're not working in tandem with the global South. We're taking their stuff. There's a reason the global North is the U.S.'s quote-unquote allies, and also just other countries that, you know, bend to the will of the United States, like Saudi Arabia and Israel. There's a phrase, it's called neocolonialism, which is basically, you know, formerly colonized states taking on the will of the colonial class and doing the United States. I think it's basically foreign non-white allies in order to get on the good side of the United States, you know, bend to their interest. It happened in Chile in 1973 when the U.S. quite literally overthrew their democratically elected leader, and that's happened many times. And now, you know, powerful enough nations can get the U.S. to protect it militarily, and we can the U.S. can us jack everyone's resources, and there's no other thing the third world can do about it, because either they don't cooperate and they're poor, or they do cooperate and they further the oppression of the U.S. empire, like in Saudi Arabia with the oil deals, and, you know, Trump's literally profiting off business deals and retail deals with the Saudi Arabian government. So, you know, it's a complicated world. And, you know, the capitalists are already in coordination in the global South. There are no real powerful forces compared to the U.S. and North America and the rest of the global North. But if there was a way for the world to coordinate in the opposite direction in the interest of the global masses, there's not that much that you would have to sacrifice, because the people who would have to sacrifice some material wealth probably wouldn't see too much of a loss in their gains of comfort, because they're not using a lot of it because they don't want to interact with it. You know, someone who owns the means of production wouldn't necessarily have to give up any means of production. They would just have to share it.
Right. We have a few people hoarding massive amounts of wealth that they never see. Like, it's basically just numbers on paper. You could take 95% of their wealth and it still wouldn't affect their day-to-day lives. Like, this is how massive the amounts of wealth being hoarded by a very select few individuals are.
Right, of course. You know, I don't know what revolution would look like in the United States, but I have a feeling that since the U.S. is the imperial power, we're going to have to coordinate with a lot of other countries in order to resist, and, you know, striking is a part of that, and if Amazon workers from across the country, he can, strike and demand better wages and working conditions, or stop working, and, you know, what's Amazon going to do? You know, big companies are now going international, and, you know, now that's to the advantage, because capitalists can extract wealth from anywhere they want without, you know, living, because free movement of capital is allowed, but not free movement of people, which linked back to the refugee crisis. But, you know, if free movement of people and resources were allowed at the same time, and international corporations coordinated with one another as workers, as equals, you know, we have social networks that can connect instantly across the world with one another, and we're not using it for unionization yet. We're not using it to destroy the systems around us and build better ones. We're using it to perpetuate systems. Now, there are a few people like you and like me and like Brian who are within the system and fighting internally inside it, and that's good. We need more of us, because the more people that think like us, the more we can work together and grind the system to a halt. And perhaps the revolution doesn't have to happen one country at a time. Perhaps, you know, the entire Amazon, Netflix, Facebook, YouTube, everyone who works at these giant companies can unionize, can cooperate, can band together against their bosses, stop working, take it over on the internet, maybe do some hacking and stuff, I don't know. but it might be simpler than we're making it out to be to revolt against this, because they've already met us, giving us the tools that we need to overthrow them. We just haven't started using them that way yet.
Right. Maybe revolution. I know a lot of people, or some people on the left, they talk of revolution as like an adventurism kind of thing, that it's going to be, you know, shooting in the streets and this very like brutal sort of revolution. But there are other ways, you're right, that their revolution can look like a lot of different things, and using the tools that we're being exploited by is kind of a beautiful way of doing a revolution. Using the systems that the enemies have put in place to bring them down is kind of brilliant.
Yeah, exactly. And whatever conservatives is, but you live under capitalism, I want to respond like, do you want me to start selling shit? Because I can, you know?
Right. You're going to, complain about me shopping somewhere. I can just help myself to things if you'd prefer. But somehow I don't think that's what they want either. Well, let's see. We've already been talking for a half an hour. I had one more subject we wanted to get to, but maybe we can briefly touch on it. And it was a current push of a Red Scare, sort of, that as capitalism is failing and more people are starting to see that capitalism is failing, a narrative starts to be pushed again of how evil communism and socialism is. And you start seeing a resurgence of propaganda, you might say.
You know, they
stuff like that.
Yeah, they paint, cooperative efforts as, you know, cultish. And when you're put in a position in capitalist country, is to either buy or be bought, sell or be sold. You know, that doesn't sound very individualistic to me. And, you know, we know that the CIA and the Pentagon work with movie productions to make accurate portrayals of the military, read favorable, not necessarily accurate, because that feeds back into the military-industrial complex and imperialism. And, you know, we can either accept a premise or refuse it, but it's hard to really construct a new one if we're not building one, because we live in it. It's hard to resist it. It surrounds us. But the least we can do, you know, this summer is to not, you know, sing any patriotic songs on the 4th of July and shit. You know, we can scoff at the television and seeing corporate propaganda. We can say to ourselves and our friends and our coworkers, it doesn't have to be this way. There's all we could do to resist it. It doesn't have to be huge. But it can be sort of a way to, you know, make our message heard in such a way that is palatable to other people. And in terms of the Red Scare of entertainment, we can write things that are favorable to the working masses, and it can be a little sneaky. Like, for example, you know, I don't know if you've seen Sorry to Bother You.
Yes.
That was a good movie about a telemarketer who rises up in the telemarketing world and starts selling higher ticket items, as it were, and he realizes is that towards the end he's selling slave labor over the phone. And, you know, it does place, you know, the owners in a bad light, and that's good. And, you know, sci-fi can certainly do that in ways that other types of fiction can't, but it's not necessarily explicit, but it can plant a little seed in the head of the viewer. But other companies and media corporations can fire back with entertainment of their own that paints the business in a good light. So it's a struggle.
Yeah, and I think, like, this year, like, a couple of examples I had thought of when we were talking about this pre-interview was, you know, spoilers. I'm only actually two episodes in, so I can't spoil too much, but on this season of Stranger Things, the Russians are the enemy. And we've had this show on Showtime, the Chernobyl, I don't know exactly what they call it, like a sort of fake documentary kind of thing. But, you know, a lot of that, they push how it was the state, you know, the chairman councils and things like that that were the evil doers in that. And, I mean, a lot of things went very, very wrong in Chernobyl. I have a friend who was a safety officer for a nuclear reactor. And he one day, like, listed the amount of things that had to go wrong for Chernobyl to happen. And it was just this, I think it was at least a good, like, 15 things that had to go wrong. But they placed a lot of blame in this documentary on the USSR and their secrecy and how they, you know, it would be a blow to their pride to have some sort of nuclear failure. And so that's playing into that, like, you know, the enemy is the communist kind of thing. Right. And I think we're seeing it more and more. And, I mean, how many times have you been accused of being a Russian troll yourself? I know.
A few times. It's basically xenophobia. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there are ways for a so-called foreign cause to be appealing to people. Oh, they just have to use it in their own interest and their conditions and how they live. Oh, you see the Chernobyl documentary, but you can also see, you know, the 13th, which is an indictment, you know, on how slavery in America kind of adapted to modern times. And, you know, that's a reaction to capitalist propaganda and in a way that is not necessarily revolutionary, but still sort of progressive in nature, to examine parts of history that are especially heinous in America and continue to be. Blue Lives Matter reacts to Black Lives Matter, but there's only a Black Lives Matter because blue lives so-called have asserted their power. So we got a lot of fighting to do internally and rhetorically. And I think that productions and shows and movies are going to possibly do a lot more anti-socialist coding in such a way they can give your doubts that under a different system they'll retain their individuality. Now, of course, they will, because they won't be subject to a capitalist boss. But poverty can make you paranoid, and being a victim of imperialism can make you paranoid. And, people say that socialism causes poverty. I think it's the other way around. I think that poverty causes socialism. Being denied access to things causes people to want to cooperate and share those things and take the things from the people who are hoarding them.
Yeah, they're in capitalism, they are planting the seeds of their own destruction, that as this growing income inequality and poverty is just raging across the country, that no one can afford to meet their basic needs, that they're creating their own destruction because something's going to have to give. Like, people aren't just going to go quietly and die because capitalists would like them to.
Yeah. We got neo-Nazis coming back. And people who were apologists for concentration camps, they should have followed the law as if that made any sense, because the law sucks.
Right.
Even if it was illegal when it's not.
So what message would you have to people who are trying to think a little more critically and trying to evaluate their media and their entertainment as well as, does this have a bias that maybe is flying under my radar? Would you be able to give anybody any advice to how to evaluate the things they're consuming a little more critically?
Well, first of all, someone suffering at their job does not necessarily build character, despite what the media might tell you. And, making something of yourself is not necessarily a great thing. If it means you have to work constantly and you're never around to enjoy the resources that you accumulated because you're too tired to actually engage with any of them or anybody you meet, because you have to go to sleep and go to work the next day and do it all over. And so even middle management is not necessarily having a great time. As far as thinking critically about your place in the world, if you find a show that you're or a movie that you relate to, think about the struggles that the characters have had to overcome to get to a place where they're meaningfully happy, and ask yourself, did they really have to struggle that much?
Right.
Every interaction and every material benefit happened because of previous material benefits, previous inventions. There's no television show or movie that doesn't have a previous story attached to it. We just happen to start the story at any particular middle. Everything's in the middle, and everything comes from either the beginning that goes before it or the new middle in the next story that can come after it. There's this thing in storytelling called an inciting event, the thing that changes the main character's world. And class consciousness can be the inciting event of the actual world. We can realize we've been screwed over, and we can art with sharing a Facebook meme critical of, you know, of poverty and the current social order, and it can end in taking stuff over from the people who can actually manage it together and not hoard it, because there's no reason to, and we can live, not necessarily happily ever after, but we can live in a way that strives to constantly improve in such a way so that we don't have to submit to the authority of a few rich people who have to tell us what to do in order for themselves to survive. We can all survive, we can all cooperate, or we can all suffer at the hands of climate change, and you can all die.
Right. I think that was a great place to start wrapping it up today. Giving people... I loved your "It's Always the Middle." That's a great, like, that may be what I end up titling this episode, is "It's Always the Middle." Did you have any final words, maybe something to give people a little bit of hope before we close it out today?
Keep fighting.
Keep fighting. Absolutely. It's always the middle. The fight isn't over yet. The fight is, it's just the beginning of the fight, but I think we'll get there, and we have to, ultimately.
That's okay. Thanks a lot, Heather.
Thank you so much, Jeremy. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. To my listeners, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate you more than you can possibly know. We would not be here if it were not for you. We're not a corporate media company. We are here to be a media company for the people, for the workers, for the activists. And because of that, we need to ask your help. If you can at all, and if you have anything that you possibly can give us, go on to www.njrevolutionradio. Click on that donate button, even if it's a dollar a month. You know, if you can give us $100 a month, that's great. But even if you can only give us a dollar a month, that really helps us. It helps us grow. It helps us get out to more events, cover more interesting things, talk to more people, and bring that to you and help spark that social change that's so desperately needed. We appreciate you, everything you do, every time you listen. The future is yours to create. Go out there and create it.